My name is Andrew Buer, and the paper I'm talking about today is MAC address spoofing attacks against port security. I'm from Concordia University College of Alberta, which is a small little university up in Canada. And the co-authors of this paper are Dale Lindstrom, Pavel Zavarsky, and Ron Rule. So the two main findings of the paper is that port security isn't effective at preventing three different MAC address spoofing attacks in broadcast domains that span multiple switches. The interesting finding is that port security actually decreases the difficulty for performing two of these attacks. So just to give a little overview of what I'll go over today, I'm going to start with the background of kind of the switch learning process and port security. Then I'll get into the details of two of the attacks, talk about the ease of the attacks, how they're performed, how easy they are performed with and without port security enabled, and then I'll go into some of the limitations of the attacks as well too. And then finally I'm going to discuss three different countermeasures to prevent and mitigate these attacks, that being trunk port security sticky, and the segregation strategy that we actually recommend. Two things I won't be covering in this presentation today is a third attack that we discussed in the paper. It's a little bit more sophisticated, involves more switches, so I won't be going over it. And then also some of the attack limitation details, such as reconnaissance and improving attack success. And for some of these details, you can find them in the paper. So what is Cisco's port security? It's basically a restrictive control that's applied directly to edge ports to prevent attacks. It started off as a control to mitigate CAM overflow attacks, where an attacker sends multiple source spoofed frames in order to overflow the MAC address table of a switch and cause it to flood frames out all ports. But it's since been recommended as a control to mitigate MAC address spoofing. And it basically works by looking at the source MAC address and comparing that to other alert MAC addresses in an address table. So when port security is not enabled, a non-secure switch learning process is used. The switch looks at ingress frames and looks at the source MAC address and associates that with a particular port. The reason it does this is to efficiently learn basically where nodes are on the network and can forward frames to them efficiently. This table is a one interface to many MAC address table so that multiple nodes and switches can be interconnected. And these entries are typically aging so that topology reconfigurations can occur. When port security is enabled on a particular port, a secure switch learning process is implemented. It's very similar to the non-secure process. However, the entries are typically non-aging and they take precedence over the non-secure entries. When two switches are interconnected, they have no ability to distinguish between a directly and an indirectly connected network node. Example I have here is a frame is sent to two switches. The first switch sees the frame as A, MAC address A, being associated with port 1, which is a directly connected network node. And the second switch associates MAC address A with port 10, that being its local port. And the switches cannot tell the difference between whether this node is directly or indirectly connected. They simply just forward that frame. Obviously, that takes importance in the attacks I'm going to discuss. MAC address spoofing is possible on a broadcast domain because switches like to maintain loop-free tree-like broadcast domains. So what they'll do is they'll never actually replace or they'll never duplicate a MAC address on their own local MAC address table. Instead, they will just overwrite that MAC address on a last observed basis. So this is the whole premise of why MAC address spoofing actually can occur. Port security has two violation conditions, according to Cisco. The first being the maximum number of secure MAC addresses have been added to the address table, and a station whose MAC address is not in the address table attempts to access the interface. So this violation condition is primarily intended to mitigate CAM overflow attacks because it looks at a maximum. But in regards to MAC address spoofing, two caveats actually exist. First, that there's no mechanism to ensure that the node registers their legitimate MAC address. And secondly, that there's no mechanism to ensure the immediate registration of that MAC address. And this obviously takes importance in the attacks. Second violation condition of port security is an address learned or configured on one secure interface is seen on another secure interface in the same VLAN. So this is more intended to mitigate MAC address spoofing. But the interesting thing is that it only applies when both interfaces are secure interfaces. So basically the best practices for port security in an enterprise environment is to set the maximum number of secure MAC addresses as low as possible and to enable them on access ports only. Before I discuss the attacks, I'm just going to make two assumptions. First, that the attacker hasn't registered their MAC address, or if the attacker has registered their MAC address, they have the ability to unplug the cable, which on the default settings of port security will actually remove the entry in the secure MAC table. If port security sticky is enabled, however, this will not remove the entry, but I'll be discussing this in the control section of the presentation. The second assumption I'm going to make is that no port security is enabled on the interconnecting interfaces. So this goes against best practices, but it is a control that I'll discuss in the control section. And finally, for the purpose of the presentation, I'm just going to assume that the attacker has full network knowledge, but in the paper, we go over the details of if the attacker doesn't have knowledge of the broadcast domain, how they can obtain that knowledge and actually make the attacks still be effective. So the first attack is an impersonation attack. So given this topology here with two access switches and a distribution switch, we're going to assume that port security is enabled on all the on the edge ports, and it is not enabled on the interconnecting interfaces between the access switches E1 and E2 and on the distribution switch D1. So the attacker A is going to listen for V1 victim 1 and V2 victim 2 to communicate at some point in time. So victim 1 will send a ARP request to V2, which will be a broadcast. The attacker will see that. And V2 will reply to V1 with an ARP reply unicast. So this will generate a MAC address table that looks something like this, where the MAC address for V1 is associated with port FA01, which is a secure port, and it is directly connected. And MAC address for V2 is going to be on port GI01 up there, which is a non-secure entry, which is indirectly connected. So the attack begins by the attacker replaying the exact ARP reply message that V2 would have sent to V1. The attacker will not see it, but it will be able to know what that address or that ARP reply is. It doesn't have to necessarily be an ARP reply. The reason it uses the ARP reply is because it has the same source MAC address that contains the MAC address of V2. So what's interesting here is that no violation will actually occur because the previous entry was a non-secure indirectly connected entry. And what I said earlier about secure entries is they actually take precedence over non-secure entries and will overwrite them. So the resulting MAC address table will look something like this, where V2 is now associated with port FA02, which is the attacker there, and is now a secure directly connected port. So from this point forward, all frames that V1 attempts to send to V2 will be delivered to the attacker. So the attacker can then impersonate V2 and establish any sort of communication session on behalf of V2 without V2's knowledge. One thing that can't happen in this attack is that A cannot forward frames to V2 because that would involve using another source MAC address and would cause a port security violation to occur. When port security is not enabled, this attack actually becomes more difficult simply because a race condition is introduced. So if A replays the V2's ARP reply and updates the MAC address table, same way it just previously did, that will still cause an overwrite without port security enabled, but that will actually start the race, and the attacker will be winning that race until V2 attempts to communicate with any node on switch E1. When that happens, the attacker will be losing the race, and frames will no longer be forwarded to the attacker, they'll be forwarded to the second victim. So the attacker has to constantly update the MAC address table in order to receive frames that were originally intended for V2. What's even more difficult is the attacker has no idea whether it's winning or losing the race. With port security enabled, the MAC address is locked to that particular port, so all frames are always delivered to the attacker, so the attacker does not have to worry about any races. This attack does have some limitations. First of all, the attacker cannot impersonate any directly connected node. It can only impersonate indirectly connected nodes. And moreover to that, the attacker cannot impersonate two indirectly connected nodes. It has to impersonate an indirectly and a directly connected node. So to summarize, the attacker can impersonate one half of the network nodes, but only a quarter of the total communication streams because they occur in a unidirectional fashion. The second attack is a full man-in-the-middle attack, which is a little bit more lucrative for an attacker. However, it does require some additional switch port access. So in practice, this may be an adjacent office cubicle or maybe access to a wiring closet. This attack actually begins exactly like attack one as well, too, where the attacker replays an ARP reply out FAO2 on switch FAO2 on switch E1, which causes the update of the MAC address table on E1 so that frames that V1 attempts to deliver to V2 are delivered to the attacker. But then the attacker replays the ARP request, the initial ARP request that V1 sent to V2, because it contains the source MAC address of the of V1, and it replays that out port FAO2 on the second switch there, E2. So what will happen now is that any frame, this will cause the table of the source MAC address, or the address table of E2 to update, so that frames that V2 attempts to deliver to V1 will now be sent to A. So now this is a full man-in-the-middle attack, where anything that V1 attempts to send to V2 will be delivered to A, and anything that V2 attempts to send to V1 will be delivered to A as well, too, effectively bypassing the distribution switch. Now, in the paper, we actually said that this may be detected because the ARP reply that is generated from the ARP request would be unsolicited. But what we didn't actually realize, and I found this out when I was making the slides, is that this unsolicited ARP reply will actually go through the attacker. So the attacker has the ability to block that ARP reply just using some simple program logic. So like the first attack, this attack is more difficult without port security enabled. And it's actually more difficult than the first attack because a race condition exists on both sides of the attack. If either race is lost by the attacker in this case, then the communication stream will have issues and the attack will fail. So now I'm going to talk about the defense and countermeasures for mitigating and preventing these attacks. The first one that we looked at was interconnecting switch port security, so enabling port security on those interconnecting interfaces between the access switches and the distribution switches. So this would effectively span the secure entries across the entire domain and could actually be used to prevent the attacks. However, there are four problems with doing this in a variety of environments. The first problem is that Ether channel is not supported on these interfaces, and typically you'll see Ether channel on these interfaces, so that the benefits of Ether channel will be lost in order to prevent these attacks. The same thing goes with Spanning Tree Protocol. It is not interoperable with port security simply because a topology change would cause the secure entries to be moved to a new port, and then a violation would occur. The third problem is node relocation. And this is probably more important for an enterprise type environment because there's no deregistration mechanism built into port security. So when a node is moved from one switch, one access switch, to another access switch, that entry will be removed from the access switch, but it will not be removed from the distribution switch. So that when the node moves to a new switch, when it tries to attempt to communicate with the distribution switch, that entry will still be in the distribution switch, and a violation will occur as soon as it tries to communicate with it. And then finally, there's an increased risk to the infrastructure, because port security was designed as a control to be applied to the access edge, where if a violation occurs, it only affects one particular node. That is amplified in the distribution layer, because if that occurs, a violation occurs, it can affect the entire broadcast domain. The second defense and countermeasure that we looked at was port security sticky, which already exists, but it's not a preventative measure. It's actually only a mitigation, because if the attacker hadn't registered a MAC address previously, then they still have the ability to spoof an address. Another problem with port security sticky is that the is node relocation. So if a node moves from one access switch to another access switch, with port security sticky, that entry is not going to be removed when the cable is unplugged. The problem with that is that from that point forward, all frames will be delivered to the wrong port on that access switch. So some sort of manual change control process needs to be implemented whenever a node moves. The problem with this, we believe, is that it undermines the dynamic benefit of having a switch learning process in the first place. You might as well have everything static entry if you're going to be doing that. The final defense and countermeasure, which we propose actually, is a strategy to segregate broadcast domains based on trust and role. So the ideal thing here would be to actually despan the broadcast domains to individual switches. This would effectively prevent these attacks from being able to occur. But in some environments, logical grouping is required, so spanning of these VLANs is sometimes required. Excuse me. And because of the benefits of flexibility, cost, and performance. So our strategy is basically to just start segregating in areas where those benefits, that flexibility, is not necessarily required. So we propose to divide nodes based on their trust and role, so whether they're trusted nodes or untrusted nodes. And that can go a step further. The trusted nodes can be divided into servers and clients, and the untrusted nodes would be mobile and temporary clients. So then the trusted nodes could only attack the trusted nodes, and the untrusted nodes could only attack the untrusted nodes. So you can then take that a step further and actually start segregating the untrusted nodes into single switch broadcast domains, mainly because they're the most likely nodes to attack each other. And a lot of times the need for spanning the VLANs on untrusted nodes aren't necessary. And on the other side of things, the trusted nodes can also be segregated based on their particular role, whether they're a client or a server. So typically you'll have your clients that still span the VLANs, but they can attack untrusted nodes, or they can attack servers, is typically what they'd be going after. Servers, you can even take a step further as well too, and segregate them into their own VLANs that don't span multiple switches. Just in case a server is compromised, then it cannot attack other servers. But in cases where redundancy is required and MAC addresses need to move to other switches, port security sticky is a mitigation that can be applied to servers because they typically don't move between ports nearly as much as clients usually would. So that's the end of my presentation. I was a little fast, but there's lots of time for questions.
All right, let's thank the speaker. If you have any questions, please use the mic.
Hello. Can you bring up the second attack slide? So in this case, you have an individual attacker connected to both the leaf switches. Would this attack work if there were two coordinating attackers communicating via a back channel?
Do you want to explain a little bit more?
Suppose that you have attacker 1 on switch E1 on FAO2 there, and attacker 2 on E2, FAO2, and attacker 1 and attacker 2 are communicating over some back channel, like say a wireless network or something like that. Could the two attackers coordinate this specific attack against V1 and V2?
I'm going to say yes, but I might not fully understand exactly what you mean. So I'd have to look at it in a little bit more detail.
Okay, I could try to clarify more. Is there something confusing you about it?
So you're saying V1 and V2 are both attackers?
No, I'm saying instead of just a single attacker, you split that into two attackers.
Oh, I see. As long as that node has the ability to forward frames to the other node within a reasonable time, right? Because you don't want to introduce too much latency on the link that it becomes noticeable that there's retransmits of frames and whatnot, right?
Thank you.
Yep.
So what hardware did you actually experiment with on this?
This was Cisco gear. I didn't have a lot of stuff to do the testing, but it was 2960s and 3550s running the I run a bunch of different versions of iOS. I got different results based on the iOS version that I was running. I mentioned some of that in the paper actually, that the older version wouldn't update the MAC address, the non-secure MAC addresses, immediately. You'd have to actually wait for the entry to clear. And that would kind of happen every 10 or 20 seconds whenever a topology reconfiguration notification went across the broadcast domain.
Yep.
So there's different behavior based on different switches. So I think each vendor probably implements this slightly a little bit differently. But I tried a variety of switches just to make sure that it, and the newest iOS to make sure that these attacks do work on the newer versions.
And are you making your code available?
There's really no code necessary to perform these attacks, right? Because all you're doing is you're changing the source MAC address.
Right.
And there's also existing programs already
so
out there that
use LibNet or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like I was using Scapy to do most of it, but I mean you can. It's pretty simple.
All right. Let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you.